crazy divergence in the commodity markets today. Beans sharply higher, wheat sharply lower. Cattle with solid gains and lean hogs mostly lower. And the Fed. Man, I cannot wait to get Bubba in here. The Fed was a bit more dovish than most expected at the end of today's FOMC meeting.
Live from the Fortress of Freezitude via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, it's a chat with Brian Hoops from Midwest Market Solutions, and right after the news, Todd Bubba Horwitz from BubbaTrading.com. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis. Hey, hey buddy. Thanks, buddy. Woo. How are you, man?
I don't know.
Why?
I was out walking the dog, and this monkey comes running out of nowhere.
Stop it.
He bit me on the leg. I feel weird, very tingly.
Oh.
I don't know what it is.
One of those little black and white little monkey things?
I didn't get a good look.
It was a monkey?
He's throwing banana peels over his shoulder as he ran off. So I can only assume it was a monkey.
It could have been a possum.
Maybe it was a possum. Because possums don't
carry rabies.
They both like
to hang from their tails.
They do. I feel much better. I'm not going to go to the doctor.
I have no idea where this is coming from or going to.
What? It's Ted the Hammer's fault. It's all his fault. He got me going on a rabbit trail. Hi, Ted. Are you listening today? Hi, Ted. Thanks for this. You've completely derailed Chip, Ted. That's what you've done. I hope you're pleased.
Wow. That's a nice way to come back to the afternoon show after a couple of days off.
Welcome back.
Yeah. Outstanding. Glad to be here. Wow. What happened to the commodity world while I was gone? This thing just turned all bizarro. When you've got 30-plus cent gains in soybeans and – well, spring wheat was 30 cents lower.
Mm-hmm.
A 60 cent move on that bean wheat spread, if there is such a thing, and guys actually trade it. But a 60 cent move in that thing today is absolutely shocking. The energy markets, I didn't mention that. Energy's pretty much traded to the upside. That March crude oil contract up over 87 bucks for most of the day, right at it right now. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then I think equities are still trying to figure out exactly what happened at the FOMC meeting. And we'll get some reaction from Bubba, of course. But
I bet we will.
The Dow was higher earlier in the day, now trading about 225 points lower. So it's there are some big moves that are happening in the market, no doubt about it. I'm not exactly sure when the Fed is going to pull the trigger and start making things happen. Hey, let's get to it so that we can leave time for Bubba.
Chip, after two big up days to start the week, selling came back to the wheat markets today. There wasn't much that changed in the wheat market, so profit-taking got a lot of the blame for the pressure on wheat prices. There was some snow in hard red winter wheat country that will help improve conditions this spring, but traders note the deteriorating condition of the winter wheat crop should limit selling interest. Chart watchers say March soft red wheat futures seem to be setting a trade range between 775 and 825 for the near term. Today, March hard red winter wheat futures 18¾ cents lower, 815¾. March soft red plunged 23 cents, 795. March spring wheat closed at 916¼, down 31 cents on the day. Been a wild ride in the wheats so far this week, Chip.
Oh, absolutely. Back on, let's see, January 18th, we were at 750. Yesterday, we doggone near touched 850 in the March HRW contract, backed it off today, but some crazy volatility in that market.
Ethanol production in the weekend of January 21 fell 18,000 barrels to an average of 1.035 million barrels per day. That's well above the level seen the same week last year, but is roughly 14,000 barrels behind the pace seen 2 years ago. Ethanol stocks continue to shoot to the upside and reached 24.476 million barrels, up 884,000 from last week and 445,000 above the same week last year. The potential for rains in South America chased some buying out of the corn market today, but spillover support from solid gains in the soy complex helped pull corn to the upside. March corn did find resistance at yesterday's high of 631 through the end of the week, but today's contract high and session high close suggest the market still has upside momentum. March corn futures 7 cents higher today, 627.
May corn up 6.5, 6.25. July 6.19 and 1/4 on the close. That's up a nickel chip.
Yeah, really impressive move in the market last week and the first couple of days this week. A little bit of consolidation yesterday, but off to the races again today. Lots of upside momentum.
Today's strength in energy futures helped support soybean oil prices, which helped soybean prices trade higher early in the session, even with wheat prices sharply lower and corn prices slightly lower. The resiliency of the soy complex eventually chased sellers out of the market and opened the door to strong gains. March soybean futures came within 2 cents of the June 7 contract high, and it did post a new contract high close. The publication Oil World today estimated South American soybean production at 186.3 million metric tons, down 7.4 million from last year and the smallest in the past 4 years. Chip, March beans 32.75 higher, 1440. May beans up 31, 1447. July close at 1450.5. That's up 30.25 cents on the day.
Yeah, that they've got Oil World has the Brazilian crop down around 135 million metric tons, about 3 million below where we were a year ago. Let's make the jump early. Let's see if we've got Bubba on the line. Bubba, you there?
I'm here. I'm disgusted, but I'm here.
Okay,
First of
all, very dovish.
Paul gets the three I's, incomplete, idiot, imbecile, because this is the dumbest statement I have ever heard in my entire life of what he is talking about. First, about the jobs market, okay? Look, there's no jobs because everybody had stimulus, so nobody wanted to go to work. They're paying ridiculous wages. These companies can't stay open with the wages they have to pay. This inflation is so much higher than they admit to that if they don't do something, and since they're not going to reopen up the oil wells, they're going to have to raise rates. And the longer they sit by here and try to appease the stock market, listen, we're right now at an effective nominal yield and interest rates of negative about 5%. Okay, that's the nominal yield. I have to subtract the CPI from their interest rate. So we are in so much trouble here, which is good for the grains right now because, of course, that money's going to go somewhere. But the equities are getting hammered now after being way up. And he said absolutely nothing. He's trying to talk in circles. He's trying to imitate Alan Greenspan, who never spoke English. So this is this is a horrible report. This is a horrible decision. And as I said to my members yesterday, if they do not hike rates today, this market's going to fall apart. And sure enough, here we are falling apart because this guy has no clue and has become too political in a corporation that's supposed to be private. But, of course, that's not really the case.
Yeah, Bubba, what I don't get from I wasn't paying 100% attention to it, but what I don't get is how on one hand they say, listen, we can make a move anytime we have to. If we have to make an emergency move, we'll make it. But on the other hand, they say, you know what? We feel like we've got some time in here before we can do anything. They're just butting heads with themselves, aren't they?
Well, they're trying to appease the stock market. Here, let's look at the real facts. I know I got to be quick, but Congress has invested in the stock market. They want the low rates. They want the market to keep going higher. Okay, they don't care about the little guys. They care about the big banks who, unbeknownst to most, were lent trillions of dollars over the last quarter. Okay, this is what I'm talking about. These rates should have been raised 5-6 years ago. They should have been going up all along to stop this crap before it got started. Now we're in a mess that we're never going to get out of. It's going to take a massive meltdown in this market to ever get back to
Todd equal. Horwitz, Bubba Trading.
When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Wow. Bubba's a little fired up.
He's fired up. He may still be talking.
that is very
if his cat
very true.
If his cat could talk, you know, that's a cat you want on your team.
no doubt. Can you imagine that? Well, you know, Bubba would have said, I could tell you more for a can of tuna, but All right, we're going to get to Brian Hoops from Midwest Market Solutions here just soon as Davis wraps up the rest of the news.
Sure thing. Well, front month cotton futures posted a low range open and a high range close today. March cotton 141 points higher, 122.33. July up 116, 116.92. Live stocks after sharp declines earlier this week. Live cattle futures posted an upside correction today. February live cattle 95 cents higher, 138.05. April fats up a buck 80, 141.90. March feeders up 95 cents, 160.80. And on the snout side, front month lean hog futures erased early session losses and surged to the highest level since June 14. That means February lean hogs finally filled the nickel wide June 15 downside price gap. Wow. February hogs 57 and one half higher, 88.02 and a half. April down 80 cents, 96.45. Chip.
Yeah, I had a recollection that that gap was still open back there, or that there was a gap. I didn't realize exactly where it was, and I went and looked at it, and oh my gosh, went up and filled that gap.
You're sharp as a tack, bro.
I'm just trying to keep up. That's all I'm doing. but. When let's bring Brian Hoops in here for this part of the conversation. Yeah. Brian Hoops, Midwest Market Solutions. How you doing, buddy? Hello, Mr. Hoops.
Hello, guys. How are you guys doing? I'm good.
Good, good, good. There you are. So we were talking about that, the February hogs going up and filling that gap that's all the way back there in June. If there's one market that you can basically rely on to go back and fill gaps, whether they're downside price gaps above the market or upside price gaps below the market, it's hogs. Hogs love to go and fill gaps, don't they?
They do. They will go and fill a gap no matter what the news is. they're just out on a mission to fill gaps and to do technical damage and technical reversals and run stops. They are not very fun to trade. They're like the old pork belly markets when they still used to have those, 15 years ago, whenever they quit trading. But it's, a volatile market. But, yeah, it went back all the way back to June, filled the gap before it expires in a couple weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's crazy stuff. Now, okay, talk about that a little bit more. Because, obviously, they did away with the pork bellies because there was just too much opportunity for, some manipulation of the physical market. If nothing else, it was kind of like the broiler market and the egg market. It's just too easy to break eggs and play with the supply, the physical supply out there. But is the hog market still a viable tool?
You know, I think it is. You know, it's still cash settled against the lean hog index. So yeah, it's still viable. It's, you know, just unfortunately, we just hear less and less and less independent hog producers out there that are, you know, actually there to take advantage of this hog market. Unlike in cattle, there's just so much supply that's controlled by a commercial entity, and the farmer anymore is more of a custom operator. There's still a few guys out there, but the numbers are dwindling, and so. Yeah. You know, from that perspective, there isn't that much actual true hedging that's being done by your smaller farmer. A lot of it is done by big commercial type entities that will still use that market as a hedging tool. But on a day-to-day basis, there's a lot of trading being done that maybe don't really track what the fundamentals are actually doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. It's a head-scratching market more often than some of the other markets. There's no doubt about that. And, Brian, the comment that I get from the few independent hog producers that I do know is that if they use the future/options market, options number one, preferable there, but number two, if they get into a futures position, they've already made they've already had the conversation with the bank and said, listen, we understand that this thing could get crazy on us, but if the bank's going to be there to finance margin calls if need be, because in this case, a hedge is a hedge is a hedge. We're not going to play around with getting in and out of this thing.
Yeah, you really can't do that, especially in this hog market, because it, you know, one 2 days being out of the market on the wrong side of things, he can really turn against you in a heartbeat. So yeah. If you want to use it as a hedge, I still think there's some viability to it, so that it's still is important part of it, but just for a small producer, there's just not that much hedging being done by the small guys any longer.
Okay. All right. So Bubba was fired up about the Fed and the dovish stance, and basically, you know, the Fed has always said we're going to let the data determine what we're going to do. Well, in this case, what they're saying is if inflation deteriorates further, we're going to have to address that later. I don't know what they're waiting for on this, Brian. Do you?
they're in a no-win situation, I think, at this point. I think they had an opportunity a year ago to step in and slowly start easing rates, but they didn't want to do it because of the pandemic that was going on. Now they're at a point where the economy isn't all that great. You don't really want to increase interest rates in a poor economy because it makes things just worse. And, you know, what they're saying today, they're talking about raising rates at every meeting in 2022 because they don't think it will hurt jobs. I would have to really second guess what they're talking about this afternoon. And the stock market does not like what they're hearing either. You know, we were higher initially after the announcement. And since Jay Powell's been speaking, it's been just a straight mountain slide straight lower. It just does not like to hear what he is saying this afternoon. And I can't blame the market because, you know, increasing rates in this economy is not a great idea.
Yeah, S&P is off about 40. The NASDAQ's down 103. And Dow is now off 350 points. So it's been a bleed since Powell's been talking. There's no question about it. How are the grain markets going to react to higher interest rates, Brian? Is it going to have that much impact on commodity trade?
Probably a fairly minimal impact, you know, from the standpoint that a consumer producer will have his money that he borrows to put the crop in the ground, for example, will be a little bit more expensive. Land prices will get just a little bit more expensive because of the raise in interest rates. We may see a market react to that a little bit, but for the most part, I got to think we're going to continue to focus on South American weather. We're going to focus on how the markets are structured and this really strong demand base that the corn market has been building. I think that's what the market's really going to try and focus on.
Okay. All right. Interesting. And of course the influence on the energy markets, the influence that the energy markets are having on the ag commodities. There were some comments that corn and crude were starting to trade together earlier this week. I don't know if we can continue to say that today or not. Is that connection there?
I think there's, you know, there's definitely a correlation. You know, energy is in everything that we do on a day-to-day basis. To grow a corn crop, you have to use fuel and energy to put the crop in the ground, to harvest that crop. To dry it down, there's energy costs involved. To make the fertilizers, to make the herbicides that are needed, all this is energy dependent. And when that energy price spikes up like it has, and doesn't really show a sign that we're going to be coming back down even into our widely held 60 to 80 range anytime soon, it's a concern, I think, for the market. And we talk about inflationary pressures. I don't think we're going to trade corn like we followed the crude oil markets back in 2008, but we are going to react to higher energy prices on an inflationary basis and put a premium in the corn market because of it. I think soybeans also, and to a lesser extent, wheat will have that premium as long as crude oil remains high. I think it's going to, you know, definitely affect the grain prices in a positive way.
Okay. Yeah. It's one of those X factors when it comes to pricing, isn't it? I think most people understand that when I see March corn at 627 and May corn at 625, March beans at 1440, May beans at 1447, they know what I think about those prices along with the fundamentals that we've got in the market. It feels to me like both the markets are overpriced. But when you put this X factor in there, Brian, you can't. You got to accept the fact that here's where we're at, right?
Yeah, you may actually even make the case that these corn and bean prices are even undervalued considering the inflationary markets that we have with energy prices moving like they are. You talk to a producer that's looking at growing corn this year, you know, $5 cash is really not that.
Let's hold that thought. Hold that thought that maybe these markets are undervalued. We'll pick it up right there with Brian Hoops.
Council.
Time now for some news of note from Pro Farmer. An impressive snow event occurred Tuesday in the West Central Plains, where a narrow band of snow extending from East Central Colorado into West Central Kansas dropped from 10 to 27 inches. U.S. manufacturers and other companies are down to less than 5 days of inventory for key computer chips. Compare that to a typical 40-day supply on hand. NATO says there is still a diplomatic way out of the Russia-Ukraine crisis. The Department of Energy announced approval of 7 additional exchanges totaling 13.4 million barrels of crude oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve as part of their effort to combat high oil prices. California's Prop 12 has been put on hold for the time being. OPEC Plus members are producing less oil than expected, and China suspends pork imports from Italy on ASF concerns. News of note is taken from the pages of Pro Farmer. Get more news at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
I don't know what you're thinking. So call us.
Yeah, pop that down, Joe. Good work. That's some good
work. Yeah, good work.
What I meant to say was, so tweet at us at hashtag AgriTalk. That's hashtag AgriTalk.
How's that? Great catch.
Fixed it. Yeah, fixed it.
Great catch there. Welcome back. I'm Chip. That is Davis.
Hello.
And we are having a conversation with Brian Hoops from Midwest Market Solutions today. Before we get back to Brian, we're right in the middle of it, and he left me with a kind of a cliffhanger there. His comments that, you know, are we looking at corn and soybean markets that are undervalued? We're going to get back to that conversation right after Davis recaps where the market's closed.
Chip, March hard red winter wheat futures 18 and three quarter cents lower today at 8:15 and three quarters. March soft red wheat down 23 to 7.95. March corn futures 7 cents higher, 6.27. May corn up 6.5 cents, 6.25. March soybean futures 32 and three quarter cents higher today, 14.40. May beans up 31 cents, 14.47. March cotton 141 points higher, 122.33. On your livestocks, February fat cattle 95 cents higher, 138.05. March feeders jumped 95 cents to 160.80. And on the snout side, February lean hogs scampered 57.5 cents higher, 88.02.5. That's your quick market recap. Back to you, Chip.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I just got a text from Bubba.
Oh, he's still going. Fuse is still burning.
He's still going. This could be his monologue, but it says he just said high inflation never occurred. It's the highest inflation in 40 years.
No, he's got an angle, though. We just don't understand his Bubba-ism. He's like Obi-Wan right now. You know what I mean?
No, no. What I mean is what Bubba is saying, that Powell just said that high inflation never occurred.
Oh.
All right? I'm sure he said it when we've been on the air.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I don't know. Brian Hoops, Midwest Market Solutions.
It was transitory. It's
the highest, we've seen the highest inflation in 40 years, Brian. How can we say that?
I don't understand this. I know. It's like burying your head in the sand and saying that something doesn't exist. It's just ridiculous. I don't think there's hardly anyone in America that, if you ask them if they were better off today than they were a year ago, that they would say things are better. Your gas prices are $2 a gallon higher. You're just starting to get home heating bills now. I think things are probably likely to get worse instead of better here in the near term.
Yeah. Something that we all need to watch for. Okay. All right. Yeah. You've piqued my interest here. 2021 contracts, 2022 contracts could be undervalued. When it comes to 21 crop, you heard what I said. On 22 crop, I think I'm going to be on board with you with this, but let's hear the case made on 21 crop.
Well, on the old crop inventory here, $6 cash corn is pretty prevalent throughout Midwest, or no matter where you're at, basis levels are extremely tight. And now you have March corn 2 cents more expensive than the May, and about 8 cents more expensive than the July. These markets are telling you they want the crop right now. We had a pretty good run of farmers selling after the first of the year. Basis widened out just a little bit, but since then things have dried up again, and the market is telling you we need some crop right now. Don't store it until July. So whether it's ethanol demand, feed usage, corn exports, or a combination of all three, this corn market is telling us that because we've gone inverted, prices could get real, real explosive here soon. You look at what happened in soybeans last year. That was an inverted market. Starting in the fall, told farmers to sell off the combine and buy futures or options for delivery later. Spring Minneapolis wheat had the same thing this summer. We had soybean meal do that recently in the late fall and early winter timeframe, where it went inverted and we saw huge moves in soybean meal. I think we're looking at the same thing in corn. It's just gone inverted, telling us that there's underlying demand fundamentals that should give us higher prices for the old crop values.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to be clear, when Brian says inverted, means he's taking the incentive to store out of the market, nearby contracts trading at a premium to the next month contract. So March at a premium to May, May at a premium to July. It's not a lot. It's not a lot, not much of a premium, only 2 cent premium March to May. But the signal that you just talked about, Brian, it's not really based on, you know, how wide that spread is. Just the fact that it's a bull spread market that's the signal that the market wants your corn now. So points well taken.
Right. And we should stress that, you know, the market is telling you to make these cash sales now. And if you were planning on holding to July, I think it makes all the sense in the world to make those sales right now. But then also, don't forget about re-owning that crop with July. You can buy July futures cheaper than you can buy March futures for. So buy that market at a cheaper discounted price and hold on to it just like you were storing the crop.
Okay. All right. 572 and three quarters on Dece 22, 1334 on November 22 bean futures. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of growing season left. Is that why you're thinking that maybe the new crop contracts are a bit undervalued in here, or are you talking inflation here as well?
Well, it's probably a combination of everything. Not only do we have a really long growing season in front of us, but you look at cotton futures are likely to steal several million acres away from other small grains. Corn, December corn is having a tough time keeping up with new crop November soybeans at this point in time. You know, they really haven't bought any additional corn acres because soybeans have kept up so well with the corn market. So, you know, corn market really needs to add acres this spring. Soybeans are attempting to stay competitively priced so that it doesn't lose a lot of acres as well. But when you have these high input costs and you start running numbers, $5 cash corn out of the field, if you grow 200 bushel corn, that's $1,000 an acre gross. You know, 20, 30 years ago, that used to be a gold mine, but now you have expenses close to $1,000. You really need to see, you know, $6 corn at 200 bushels to get you to that $1,200 gross an acre to have any type of chance of profitability at all.
Right. Okay. Okay. What do you make of some of the corn and soybean acreage estimates that are coming into the market right now? Basically, on corn, it's a range of 90 million up to last year's planted acres of just over 93 million. Which end of the range are you on there?
I think it's right at this point in time, we have to be somewhere in between. The corn market really has not done enough of a job rallying to indicate to anyone that they're going to add additional acres. I think the farmer tendency from talking with clients through the winter, they really don't want to switch their rotations very badly, other than, you know, if they were growing something that they were getting marginal type yields on, unless there was, you know, something else like cotton or spring wheat that they could go to that's more attractive without such input costs. But compared to corn and soybean acres through the growing season. This year, I think you could lose some of the acres of corn that's been planted corn on corn because, you know, that is more reliant upon heavy fertilizer usage. So you've got a lot more expense when you, we may take away some of those acres and put those into soybeans or other small grains, but I really don't see corn adding a lot of acres and losing a small amount of acres compared to a year ago. But I think that there's still that page to be written in this book going into February, March, and April of buying for acres.
Right. Okay. Yeah, no, we've got time for this. When you're thinking about 22 crop corn and soybean marketing and risk management, anything that you really feel compelled to do right now, Brian?
You know, sometimes sitting on your hands is the hard thing to do, but also the best thing to do. I've heard some firms that are starting, you know, at the 550 mark, we're starting to sell new crop corn. And, you know, we're at 572, almost 575 today. That is, I think, starting to a point where you could get more attractive, but I do look for $6 as a more of a likely starting point as we get closer into March this year for that new crop corn. You know, that way you're looking at, hopefully, locking in some good prices during the spring growing season. You know, you might want to look at the combination of futures and options or cash sales combined with options so that you get some price floors locked in case we do get these acres planted, we get the acres that we need, and we have a great growing season. I think you could take a lot of the wind out of the sails here in the second half of 2022.
Okay, so you would rather wait just a little bit in here. Only got about a minute. Do you like cattle, or do you want to get some downside protection in place?
I love cattle at this point. We were buying on Monday on the big drop. We're hearing the slaughter numbers are going to increase here, and we have seen a pretty steady increase in kill capacity so far this week. We're very close to last year's numbers, 351,000 head versus 353 last year, but that's 6,000 head more killed than a week ago. And as we increase that slaughter capacity, we're going to increase the demand for the cattle market, and we should see a rally back up near these old highs. And at that point, I think you do want to look at doing some hedging strategies just because of the health of the economy and the lack of trust I have in our leadership.
Yeah. Good stuff, Brian. Good stuff, man. Thanks for the conversation today. I appreciate it.
Great talking with you guys. Thanks again.
All right. Love it. That's Brian Hoops, Midwest Market Solutions. Okay, when we come back, we probably are going to get a few more comments on exactly what's going on with the Fed and the Fed meeting and the very dovish comments. Next.
Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
Okay. Welcome back. Glad that you were with us. Yes. Chip, got Davis with us, and
hello.
Let's go all the way back to segment one. Who's that guy? Todd Horowitz, BubbaTrading.com. Jump back in here, my friend.
You got me back in.
I'm glad that you are here. Okay.
No inflation, so, he said.
Yeah, I'm so glad high inflation doesn't exist. Yes, let's start there.
We haven't seen high inflation. I'm not sure where we're getting this because, and then at the same time, they're saying, but inflation was stronger than what we thought it was.
Well, that's exactly the point. They don't speak English. They don't speak English when they speak. They're trying to confuse everybody. It's the same as they talk about oil. You know, they talk about global demand for oil. You know what, Chip, and you know this, oil goes into almost every product that we use in some way, shape, or form, especially water bottles and plastics. Those all need fossil fuels and oil. So there's naturally going to be a demand for oil. And when you go into the employment market, there's no employment because they kept giving away free money, so who's going to go to work? This is the biggest scam, Ponzi scheme in history. I mean, it's legalized because it's run by the Fed, but it is a Ponzi scheme just the same, continuing to print or create new money to satisfy the old debt, not to mention the $5 trillion they loaned Deutsche Bank and four or five other banks in the $1 trillion level to keep them operational, which goes back to my theory that these banks couldn't pass a stress test if you had a real accountant in there on their best days, because they're all too far behind. But of course, Congress, who benefits with their 401ks, and banks who benefit because they don't lose money. What kind of business do you have when you can make horrible loans and get yourself deep into debt? And of course, you got the white knight of the Fed coming to rise and take you out of problems and give all your big bonuses to your employees. Okay. What a joke. I mean, it's ridiculous what they're talking about. It's like we're all morons.
I hear you. The S&P is still off about 20 points. NASDAQ is off about 65. Just 2 minutes ago, the NASDAQ was close to unchanged on the day. The Dow's up.
As you got back higher.
Yep.
But it's going, look, it's ugly.
Yeah. Okay. 10-year note, 1.849, I think, was the last one that I saw. So 1.85%. On the 10-year note, where's it going? What's it tell us?
Well, I think it's going over 2, and over 2 is going to create a much bigger problem. You know, again, we have problems because, you know, the first of all, the yield curve, the front is inverting, which means that short-term rates are more expensive than long-term rates, which means that borrowing costs are going up, which is great for the banks because they get to make more profit, but not so good for the borrowers like us, who have to put, you know, crops in the ground, and we're coming into times we're going to need to be borrowing money. You know, this whole thing is wrong, and that's why you're seeing the bond vigilantes pushing very hard to bring these rates higher, because they're trying to force the hand of the Fed, because the Fed has no clueless, nor they have no backbone. And they have become, unfortunately, a political organization instead of what they're supposed to be, which is monetary policy and full employment. Well, again, you can't get full employment when companies like McDonald's has to close most of their stores now that are open 24 hours. They have to close hours, give up 10 to 15 to 20% of the hours because they can't afford it, nor can they get the help to cover.
Yep, yep. No, that's right, Bubba.
And then we got Andrew Zamonia, 400%.
Even our little convenience store in Denver, Iowa, it's Quickstar, which is normally a 24-hour store. They adjusted their hours to no overnight hours. I think they're closed like 11 to 5 now overnight, just simply because they can't get anybody to work the shift.
Have you been to a drive-through where, I mean, like a fast food place that you used to go maybe into the dining room? The dining rooms are closed because they don't have enough help to open the dining rooms. This is a much bigger problem that nobody wants to admit to, and this is why we have the fallacy and the failure of a Federal Reserve that is not following any of the mandates that were set. And to give you a comparison, the Model T and the Federal Reserve came out in 1913. Look at Ford now. They got a truck that can generate an entire house. The Fed is still using the models they created in 1913. Okay. Which is a joke because they have no control over this market, and they keep kowtowing to politicians who benefit and to big business and big banks who benefit from this. Nobody else in the country benefits from what they're doing.
Bubba, aren't the incentives to not go back to work, haven't most of those been removed? Or are we talking about some of the child tax credits and stuff like that?
Well, those just expired too. But again, people are okay. You know, they're waiting, and they're going to listen. They're squeezing the job market unintentionally because the people that they're looking for aren't people that are exactly rocket scientists. They're people that don't really want to work if they can figure out a way not to work. So they're trying to create this whole thing. And if you tie in the biggest key factor of this administration, which is to create universal basic income. So they don't really care. They're kind of happy with this whole thing because it's going to force the hand and possibly putting out more capital into the system, which is going to be horrible.
How high is the Fed funds rate going, and how high can it go before the Fed can't service its own debt?
Well, I mean, listen, every quarter point is $75 billion a month in debt service. Okay. So you figure that out, whatever. There is no number. And, you know, the real problem, the real culprit in all this, Chip, is the central banking system, not just the Fed, but the fiat currency system, the central banking system around the globe is all on the same page. So they're all doing the same thing, which is trying to get to a point where basically they're going to eliminate money, go to one master digital coin that nobody can track what the hell's going on behind the scenes. And this is where we run into the bigger problems. So that's why you hear all these lies that they continue to tell about the Fed policy and what they're doing and how they're doing it.
Yep.
I mean, you know, again, we let these banks control the country.
Yep. Bubba, we got to go. Thanks for jumping on again, man. Appreciate you.
I got the vent. I got more. Goodbye.
I know you do. I know you do. Thanks for listening today. Oh, man.